The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Bhataka Swami on January 11th, 1990 at New Talavan Farm in Carriera, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 13, Verse 62.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After seeing this, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier, fell down like a golden rod, and touched the lotus feet of Lord Krishna with the tips of the four crowns on his heads. Offering his obeisances, he bathed the feet of Krishna with the water of his tears of joy. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma bowed down like a stick. Because Lord Brahma's complexion is golden, he appeared to be like a golden stick lying down before Lord Krishna. When one falls down before a superior just like a stick, one's offering of obeisances is called dandavat. Dandavat. Danda means stick. And vat means like. It is not that one should simply say dandavat. Rather, one must fall down. Thus Brahma fell down, touching his forehead to the lotus feet of Krishna, and his crying in ecstasy is to be regarded as an abhishek, bathing ceremony of Krishna's lotus feet. In India, the Vaishnavas, when they see each other, many times they yell, Dhanavad! Dhanavad! Bow down at your feet! Bow down to your feet! Like a stick! But they don't bow down. They say, Dhanavad! The Prabhupada says, what is that? If you're going to make Dhanavad, you bow down. Why did you say it? He didn't like that. That's how here I put it in the Bhagavatam. Shouldn't simply say Dhanavad. You shouldn't, if you're going to say it, if you mean it, then pay your obeisance. He who appeared before, we continue, he who appeared before Brahma as a human child was in fact the absolute truth. Param Brahman. Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sabdhyate. The Supreme Lord is Narakriti. That is, He resembles a human being. It is not that He is four-armed. Chatur Bahu. Narayana is Chatur Bahu. But the Supreme Personality, Supreme Person resembles a human being. This is also confirmed in the Bible, where it is said that man was made in the image of God. Lord Brahma saw that Krishna, in his form as a cowherd boy, was Parabrahman, the root cause of everything, but was now appearing as a human child, loitering in Vrindavan with a morsel of food in his hand. Astonished, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and let his body fall to the earth. Usually the demigods never touch the ground. But Lord Brahma, voluntarily giving up his prestige as a demigod, bowed down on the ground before Lord Krishna. Although Brahma has one head in each direction, he he voluntarily brought all his heads to the ground and touched Lord Krishna's feet with the tips of his four helmets. Although his intelligence works in every direction, he surrendered everything before the boy Krishna. It is mentioned that Brahma washed the feet of Krishna with his tears. And here the word sujalai indicates that his tears were purified. As soon as bhakti is present, everything is purified. Sarvupadi viniyamuktam tatparatina nirmalam. Therefore, Brahma's crying was a form of bhakti anubhav, a transformation of transcendental ecstatic love. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to text 62, chapter 13, canto 10, this 1st of November, 1905-04, Gorabda, in the second Pararda of Lord Brahma. So, this beautiful pastime revealed to Lord Brahma the transcendental position of Lord Krishna. Krishna's pastimes are so mysterious that unless Krishna reveals himself to his devotee, his pastimes are not easily understood. Here Lord Krishna revealed himself to Lord Brahma, and then Lord Brahma could see that Krishna was indeed the absolute truth. So he got off his swan carrier. This is not an ordinary swan. Lord Brahma's swan carrier can travel all over the universe. It's a type of, if not transcendental, but very spiritualized or very higher, subtle type of swan. To travel all over the universe faster than the speed of light. In fact, one time Lord Shiva wanted to come down to Mayapur very quickly to see Lord Chaitanya. But his carrier is the Nandi, the big bull. So he thought that the bull goes too slow. So he requested Lord Brahma if he could borrow his swan. Because he wanted to get there in a hurry. So he borrowed the swan and he zipped down to Mayapur Navadip Dam. So there's a temple in Navadip Dam known as Hansa Bahan, meaning a place where Lord Shiva came quickly to Mayapur using Hamsa, the swan carrier of Lord Brahma. And in Hamsa Baham, the deity is underwater 364 days in a year and comes out one day a year for being worshipped from the water. So this swan is a very fast carrier. Lord Brahma is also not an ordinary person, but he is the original living entity in the whole universe. He is bowing down on the ground before Lord Krishna. Lord Brahma doesn't have to walk, he can float. But for Krishna, he goes right on the ground and touches his head to the lotus feet of the Lord. In the Vedas, there's a lot of description about Brahma and about Lord Shiva. So you find that many people worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma in India. Not many people worship Brahma because he was cursed not to be worshipped in a temple. They do something, but Lord Shiva especially is worshipped and Lord Brahma is appreciated. There are some places where he is worshipped, but not in formal temples so much. So, when in these pastimes one sees that Lord Brahma is bowing down to Krishna, accepting Krishna's supreme absolute truth, several places Lord Shiva, he also glorifies Lord Krishna. So in this way, those who have faith in Brahma or Shiva, should be easy for them to accept the supreme transcendental position of Lord Brahma, of Lord Krishna, excuse me. So it's a type of logic that if Lord Brahma is great, Lord Shiva is great, and they accept that Lord Krishna is the greatest, well, that's a pretty important point. Lord Brahma didn't recognize Krishna at first, but then now after he showed all the Vishnu forma, showed him the transcendental forms coming from Gopal, then it's very clear that Lord Krishna's position is supreme. Lord Brahma is feeling ecstasy in serving Lord Krishna. One day during the Mahaprakash pastime, when Lord Chaitanya was showing his transcendental form, that he was also Krishna. And Haridas Thakur came before him offering his obeisances. And all of a sudden he could see that he was Brahma, and Lord Chaitanya was Krishna. Then he fainted in the ground. When he came conscious, then again, he was Brahma and Lord Krishna was Lord Krishna. Purpose of offering one's obeisance is falling down on the ground and paying obeisance is for surrender. Even in the West, people understand that bowing down before someone is something pretty significant, because people say, I'm not going to bow down before no one. I'm not going to bow down before no man. So bowing down is something significant, otherwise they wouldn't state so emphatically they're not going to do it. They don't want to do it. Prabhupada explained that by bowing down before the Lord, this is very good for developing one's God consciousness. In fact, in the beginning in New York, he taught the devotees that, well, you just try bowing down. Someone said, why? Well, if you bow down, you know why. If you bow down to Lord Krishna, he promises to reciprocate. When we surrender to Krishna, he will protect us. So, the importance of the actual transcendental position of Lord Krishna is one lesson from this verse, the importance of bowing down, the procedure of bowing down, not that one goes down quickly to a prostrate position. Sometimes there's a confusion because women would like to also offer the prostrate obeisances. They think that there's some kind of a prejudice between men and women. Why men are offering prostrate obeisances and why women are not? There's some letters circulating around demanding equal rights in bowing down. But apparently the breasts of a woman have got some special significance in relation to Mother Bhumi. I don't remember offhand the full import. But for that reason, a woman's breasts are not supposed to touch the ground in paying obeisances. So that's why they only do the panchanga, kneeling, because their breasts are not supposed to touch the ground when they offer obeisances. I saw the verse in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that mentions this. At the time, I didn't think it was an important thing, so I didn't read the purport and everything to know all the details of it. But I just remember seeing that it's one of the instructions given. So it's not something that ISKCON has made, to try to create some kind of caste distinction, or nobody should feel bad about it. It's apparently that rather it's something special about a woman's body, that some things they're supposed to do in different ways than men. But in any case, mentally, one is to fully surrender. The idea of bowing down is also we're surrendering our mind. When Lord Brahma bowed down, he bathed the lotus feet of Krishna with the tears of love. In the bowing down, different parts of the body are mentioned, and the last part is our mind. We are also offering our mind to the lotus feet of the Lord. Another important aspect Prabhupada brought out is that the Lord Brahma, or the Absolute Truth, the Param Brahma, was appearing before Lord Brahma as a child, as a human-like child. You get conversations with the Christians, and in the Vatican, they portray that God is an old man. But here, it's stating how God appeared as a young child. So of course, they objected in the Vatican that they painted the actual figure of God, because that was so speculative. But when the Krishna conscious movement proclaims that the Lord appears in various human-like forms, from various age groups up to the youth, he doesn't become middle or old age. Always stays youthful. Sometimes people object, how can this be? But they don't know what the Lord looks like, except that man is made in the image of God. That means that the Lord must be having a human-like form. It must be like a human form if we are made in His image. So this truth is revealed in the Vedas also, that the Lord appears in human-like form. But He's not a human, He's always the Lord. So this is an important aspect because nowadays there's a lot of confusion due to Mayavadi philosophy. Even many Christians believe that God may be some kind of a energy pulse or something, some sort of impersonal reality. The Mohammedans say that Allah is nirakar. He's having no material akar or form. Of course, the Vedas also say that the Lord is nirguna. He's without material qualities. But the Lord is having, that doesn't bar the Lord from having spiritual qualities or a spiritual form, which is actually what the Lord has. When we think of the Lord as impersonal, then we also tend to think that everything is mechanical. And this precludes us from giving our love to the Lord. So it's very important that we understand how the Lord is a person. Lord Krishna, of course, has many different forms. Just like we know that He appears in a Vishnu form as Baraha, as the boar, as Matsya, the fish, Kurma, the tortoise, and so on. So this quote from the Bible that God appears in a human-like, or is that man is made in the image of God, confirms that the personal form of Krishna, the form as a human-like form, is the original form of God, from their point of view, which is what the Vedas say, Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam Ete Chang Sukalapum Sang Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. What is mysterious and difficult for people to understand how Lord Krishna can appear in this form is a cowherd boy with a morsel of half-eaten food in his hand, playing just like a cowherd boy running in the forest, and still be the absolute truth. It's very difficult for anyone to comprehend except for the pure devotees of the Lord. So Krishna explains, Bhaktamam ami janati, that except for my devotee, no one else can understand me. So Brahma had done some mischief with Lord Krishna, but now when he's bowing down, his heart is purified because he's overwhelmed feeling great devotion for Lord Krishna. In the Vedas, there are many examples of great devotees seeing the Lord. It's not something unusual. They ask people in other religions, what does the God look like? Or what does he do? Well, they say nobody can see him. But actually the Lord can be seen. The Lord can be seen performing his different pastimes all of the time. But if when he wants to reveal himself to different devotees, so many different devotees have seen Lord Krishna throughout the ages. When I was trying to fly to India, my flight was misdirected for 11 and a half hours. We were stuck in an airport without being let out of the plane. So I got surrounded by a group of evangelist Christians. And tried to discuss about the personality of Godhead. But they didn't want to pin it down. They didn't want to accept that the Lord could be a human-like form or just to come to this world. Or they could accept only that Jesus could come to the world. They couldn't accept that God the Father could come. And any time would get to a particular crucial point in the discussion, they would say, well, it's a mystery. These are things that we don't know. This increases our faith to know that there are some things we don't know. I said, but it increases our faith to know many things that were previously unknowable. But they are revealed by Krishna. They didn't like to hear that. So, Krishna does reveal himself, but he reveals himself to his devotees. But this is a special, really special mercy because Brahma wasn't acting exactly in a most devotional mood. But still he revealed himself to Lord Brahma. So we can accept that this is a special causeless mercy that Lord Krishna showed to Lord Brahma. Due to a previous devotional service or due to Lord Krishna's purely his causeless mercy, he revealed. Must be that Brahma has done so much service before. And then Lord Krishna, even though he wasn't in the most devotional mood at that time, he revealed himself. First he revealed his Vishnu form, and that shocked and stunned Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma wanted to offer his worship to Lord Krishna, and then Krishna revealed himself in his two-handed form. So in this way everything became purified. When we realize the glory of the Lord and we realize our eternal relationship as the servitor of the Lord, then all the other temporary designations recede to the background. They become purified. This is very important because nowadays there's a lot of problem in the world due to these superficial designations. Upadi. Upadi means designations or body consciousness. Someone thinks they're white or black, or someone thinks they're Jew or Catholic or Protestant. Someone thinks that they're Asian or American or European or Latin or whatever. And this is always creating problems in the world. Even just recently in Georgia, there's some problems, some racial crises came out in one high school. It's still not fully settled. Here in Mississippi, it's an ongoing potential problem all the time. Because somebody considers that they're white, someone is black, and things like that. In the Middle East, because of someone thinks that they're Arab and someone else is a Jew or Israeli, then therefore a lot of problems are there. So there's no easy solution for these things. Even they make some temporary truce, but later on things crop up. In South Africa, there's also a lot of problems which they're trying to settle, but it's not fully settled. One devotee from Africa was preaching in our Namhat tour in India, and he told all the people that his name was Anandini Das. He brought up the point that in South Africa there's apartheid, prejudice according to their skin color, but that even though now it's somewhat liberal, but previously only the Hare Krishna temple was the only religious monument in the entire country practically, where they had people from all the different communities living together and without any caste distinction. There were the Indian origin and the African origin and European origin and all the different racial representatives were all there because they didn't have any consciousness of the body as being their real self. Because they had devotion to Krishna, they could see that they're all eternal spirit souls. And this is actually the solution for this racial prejudice in the world, that people should become devoted to the Lord. Then they become free from all this temporary designation. How this happens? This happens automatically by the mercy of the Lord. So, Srila Prabhupada wants that his books should go to every person. If they can read his books, they can understand easier what is devotional service. Maybe they can even become fixed in devotional service. This is a special benediction of the Lord. Especially in this age, Lord Chaitanya has made this opportunity very accessible. In India, this problem is going on right now between Hindus and Muslims. The Muslims, when they attacked India, apparently according to history, they tore down many Hindu temples, including the temple to Lord Krishna and Lord Ram, and one Babar, pretty heavy-duty Mughal emperor, he built one mosque right over the birthplace of Lord Ram some thousands of years ago, or over 1,000 or about 1,000 years ago. Then, so now the Hindus, they want that this temple of Ram should be returned and the mosque should be moved. So this creating a lot of... That could be solved. That problem probably could be solved by sober-minded Muslims and Hindus. They could get together and solve it. The problem is that most people are not sober-minded. They just identify as a kind of racial or a racial designation as a matter of pride. But whatever it may be, we got a mosque there, we don't want to move. And the others say, well, we don't care, you know, we want to get it moved. We want to have our temple. So most people are not that Krishna conscious, that they're really wanting to see Ram worship so much. They may never even go to the temple after that. But It's a kind of a racial thing. It's attracted the mind of many people as a matter of prestige that this thing happened. And as a racial thing, the Muslims, they don't want to give in. And so there's riots going on now for the past week every day. And this is the nature, of course, of Kali Yuga, that you cannot, you get all these unnecessary arguments. But the thing that fuels it, people may mistake that it's religion that's the fault. It's not, it's the lack of real spiritual understanding that's the real problem. And the fact that people are simply identifying with their body. So as the conditioned souls, they're considering that I'm a Muslim, I'm a Christian, I'm a Hindu. Whether they practice or not, is simply like more a designation than actually a belief that they deeply adhere to. So if actual spiritual knowledge were given, then the people would become purified from these false designations. Lord Chaitanya, when he had one devotee was there who was like a lord. He was a general also for the Emperor Hussein Shah. When Hussein Shah was a young man, he taught him military art. At that time Hussein Shah was a young prince. He was a teacher. So Hussein Shah was misbehaving, and with his horse whip he whipped him in the back once, this Hindu Kshatriya lord. And then later, but apart from that, they had a very close relationship. He was actually deserved it. Later, of course, he ascended to the throne and became the emperor. And the lord remained a lord, remained a general. But then the queen saw that the emperor had a little mark in the back. Apparently the whip was pretty heavy, so it left a little bit of a scar or some kind of a mark. And she said that, how did this happen? And he didn't want to say, he said, well, somebody whipped me. Somebody whipped you? Who is that person, I want to know? No, but then the emperor wouldn't tell her because he didn't want her wrath to go on this Hindu lord. But I believe his name was Buddhimanta Khan, if I'm not mistaken, but I might be mistaken. So eventually, because she kept hounding him, then he told her who did it. Then she said, I want him to be killed. It's a matter of prestige. But the emperor wouldn't do it. He says, an uncle to me. He's like, he was my teacher. How can I kill him? She kept insisting, at least you convert him. So one day the emperor decided, okay, I'll convert him. In those days, the understanding of what it was to be a Hindu was so superficial that someone thought if you got contaminated, you were outcast. To be a follower of the Vedas was something very, changing one's religion was something very superficial. The actual teaching given in the Vedas, Sanatana Dharma, is our eternal religious principle to be a servitor of the Lord. The question of changing like this doesn't come up. But in Kali Yuga, the Brahmanas created this havoc, so that if a Mohammedan spit in a glass of water and made you drink it, or threw it on you, you were considered polluted. And then no Brahmana would accept you as a member of Vedic culture anymore. So you'd be an outcast. So then, in this way, today there's, 12% or more Mohammedans in India. In some states, like in Bengal, over 25%. Just because of this kind of speculative idea about somebody's identity. So the king, the emperor brought in this lord and said, I'm going to convert you. He said, what? Why? And there was like apparently that respectable Hindus weren't converted like that. It was done as only as like a kind of a punishment. He said, no, because my queen is insisting, because you whipped me once when I was a prince. I don't want to do it, but it's the queen insists, I can't say no. Apparently he was a henpecked emperor. So then they spit in a glass of water, and they held him, oh, no, no, threw it over him. That was it. Now you're no longer Vedic. You're now Muslim, So then he went to different Brahmanas and requested them. And somebody said, well, you go to the bottom of the Ganges. So that'll kill me. He said, yes, but next birth you'll take birth as a Hindu. He said, this wasn't like what he was looking for. You can see how people didn't convert back. The solutions they gave were like one-way dead-end roads. So Somehow he came to Lord Chaitanya and asked how he could get purified. Lord Chaitanya thought for a second and then said, you just chant Hare Krishna three times. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, you're purified. So he became one of the big generals of the Sankirtan movement after that. Someone said, why three times? Once was enough. One Harinam is enough to purify one of so many sins, more than what one can commit, for good measure. So, in Krishna consciousness there, this idea of caste or creed or color designations and false identification are crossed over very easily. But to get people to be Krishna conscious, we need to give them Srila Prabhupada's books. If they can get the books of Srila Prabhupada, then they can read them, and maybe they can understand what is the actual purpose of life, who they are. So, it's not uncommon that one will identify strongly with the body and identify with other similar types of bodies. Even though there was nobody similar to Lord Brahma, but he was identifying with his body. He thought that his body was better than Krishna's body when at first, but then when Krishna revealed his unlimited potency, then Brahma became overwhelmed with devotion and fell down at his feet and became purified from his dehatma buddhi as a Brahma. And he became fixed in his identity as a devotee of the Lord. So, this is our purpose, is to, if people can identify, daiva varnashra means, the daiva part means we identify as a devotee. We don't identify that I am a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or Vaishya or Sudra, but we identify I am a devotee of the Lord. But my body has got a particular nature. I am not my body. So I use my body according to the type of nature that the body has. Although I'll keep my own identity very clear that I'm a pure devotee of the Lord, I'm a nitya, eternal living entity. This consciousness is lacking in the previous varnashram system, especially the perverted varnashram system that degenerated during this Kali Yuga. So that created all these problems. So we don't want to reproduce, neither is it possible to reproduce a kind of caste system. But what we want to do is organize society and educate the people at large about their real spiritual identity. Because we have a material body which has a certain nature, everyone different. So for the organization of society, we do according to varnashram. But we don't ever lose sight of our actual spiritual identity as eternal devotee of the Lord. So that even as somebody has a Brahma body, or they have a Shiva, you know, whether they have a whatever, you see a Deva body, or a human body, or a Brahmin, or a Vaishya, or a Sudra, what type of, but they all engage in devotional service. When they engage in devotional service, when they're identifying as a devotee of the Lord, actually they're purified. Even though they may be superficially functioning according to a particular varna or ashram. But actually they're purified. This is what the world needs, and this is what the Krishna conscious movement is offering to the world. Yesterday in the library we were doing some service for Lord Krishna. So I just happened to look at the New Orleans Public Library database, and most of the Bhagavatams are there, although somebody kind of stole all the first canto, first part Bhagavatam. Every copy is not there. But all the other, there's up to the ninth canto is there. There's only other small books that are there, only next, Science of Self-Realization, Bhagavad Gita, 1972 edition. Few copies. But under Bhaktivedanta Swami, author, nothing under Krishna. Under Krishna, if you look under Krishna, only thing you find is a dark horse. Where did Joey disappear in the Hare Krishna or something like that? And the monkey on a stick, 16 copies. More, there's only two copies of Bhagavad Gita, but 16 copies of that. You can see there's a definite bias in the bias. And anyway, under Krishna, there's no, Bhagavad Gita is not under Krishna. Actually, the author of Bhagavad Gita should be cross-referenced. We should have our Krishna Shakti, who's a librarian, should get the cross-references there proper. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, but under Krishna, there's no mention of Bhagavad Gita. So, only way you can find the Bhagavatam is if you look Bhaktivedanta Swami, or you actually give the actual title. But if you look at Krishna, or I don't know how many other references they had, but at least, I didn't, it's a huge database, I just looked at those two names. Under yoga, it wasn't there either. Under yoga, there were some other Bhagavad books, but I didn't see Bhagavad Gita. People don't actually know even what these books stand for, what they mean. Probably the librarians don't know how to cross-reference. But Bhagavatam could be cross-referenced, you know, 1,000 times. So many important instructions are there, especially each volume could have its own cross-reference according to some volumes are talking about Brahma, some about Shiva, some about different things. People in general, they need these books. But even if they go to the library, the books are there, they can't get to them very easy. They'd have to know the name of Bhaktivedanta Swami, or they'd have to pick up, I don't know how they'd find it. See, not really easy to get to. If someone has a problem, there's an ecological problem, a racial, they want to look for a book to solve ecology. Well, they want to have a book to solve these different problems. Actually, these answers are in different parts of the Bhagavatam. But if they look in the index of the database, they won't find Bhagavatam won't come up, unfortunately. That's why even though the books are in the library, still we have to distribute the books to the people, because that's the only way they're going to easily get them in their hands. So Brahma is crying, but he's crying in ecstasy, he's crying in joy. This is the perfection of life, is when we can cry in love of Krishna, cry in ecstasy for Krishna. Brahma forgot everything, his position, he just fell down at the feet of Krishna and put his head on the lotus feet of Krishna. So we can understand how glorified Lord Brahma is, how merciful Lord Krishna is. Shri Shri Radharana Kanta ki, Shri Gaura Nitai ki, Shri Brahma Madhya Gauri Vaishna Guru Parampara ki, Shri Shri Brahma Deva ki. Any questions? How can a devotee be proud when the devotee never forgets that everything that the devotee is able to do is simply by the mercy of Guru and Krishna? In the Bhagavad Gita, there's an important verse. I don't know if you can find it. Savya Sachi is a word that comes there, not used very often. But Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that he is a nimitta matra, that he is simply a via media for manifesting the Lord, or instrument for manifesting the Lord's mercy, the Lord's will. And there in the purport, Prabhupada very nicely explained. What verse is that? Remember the number? That he shall act as an instrument. So, some remember the full verse was, I know, nimitya matra, savisachi, I can't remember the other words. It's because we forget, we think that we're the doer. Therefore, we get into the difficulty. Krishna explains how it's actually the bewilderment of Maya that we think that we're the doer. That we are the sole cause of our action. Portam iti manyate. When we think that we're doing, then we get puffed up. But if we remember, just like there was this devotee, Govinda, who was servitor of although he was a disciple, when somebody came up to him and glorified him, you're very great, you have all good qualities. And he said yes. And then Ramanuja took exception that normally Vaishnava is supposed to be very humble. Then they ask him, how is it that you're saying like that? And he said, well, I know that before I was a devotee, I had no transcendental or spiritual qualities. And if I have any qualities now that they're seeing, it must be that they're seeing simply the good qualities of the Guru. Because only by His mercy can I do anything. But because the Guru has given me some mercy, that's why I'm saying, accepting their praise. But actually, I don't have any personal good quality or credit, because I had nothing spiritual about me when I came. There's actually simply the mercy of the Lord and His devotees, His Guru. Any other question? Well, that's why everything we do it according to Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. That according to Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru, if Brahma had considered what he was doing, then he would not have done like that. So, to avoid that kind of mistake, we should also not act on the platform of false ego, but do everything considering what will be pleasing to Guru and Krishna and what was authorized by previous great devotees. Want to read a verse?
Sasmatvam ajishta yashola pasva jitva shatrum boksha rajam samrita mayayavate nirpita purrameva nimittamatram bhavisamisatram. Therefore get up, prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies, and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Sabyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight.
Purport.
Purport. Sabyasachi refers to one who can shoot arrows very expertly in the field. Thus Arjuna is addressed as an expert warrior capable of delivering arrows to kill his enemies. Just become an instrument, nimitta matra. This word is also very significant. The whole world is moving according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish persons who do not have sufficient knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan and all manifestations of an accidental formation. There are many so-called scientists who suggest that perhaps it was like this or maybe like that. But there is no question of perhaps and maybe. There is a specific plan being carried out in this material world. What is this plan? This cosmic manifestation is a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead, back to home. As long as they have the domineering mentality which makes them try to lord it over material nature, they are conditioned. But anyone who can understand the plan of the Supreme Lord, cultivate Krishna consciousness, is most intelligent. The creation and destruction of the under the superior guidance of God. Thus the battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to the plan of God. Arjuna was refusing to fight, but he was told that he should fight in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord. Then he would be happy. If one is in full Krishna consciousness and his life is devoted to the Lord's transcendental service, he is perfect.
Any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki? Srila Bhagavatam ki?